Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So here's one way I didn't expect to get a whiff of cool today. I opened my mail, and what do you think arrived last Thursday? The first Christmas catalog of the year. Yes, it arrived on July 27th. Holiday gift ideas from FTD featuring the Christmas bouquet. So there, Heatwave. The direct mail people are already into Christmas, so maybe there's hope, or at least a little relief if you can do some vision work along with it. And before we talk with climatologist Stuart Gaffin to get going today, remember on Friday we had a contest for you to determine our next Flickr project, that is a topic for photos that you, our listeners, can take and post on our webpage. Well, we decided, after getting lots of creative suggestions, not to overlook the obvious. So here's the winner, Carol from Tenafly.
My idea was we're about to have another heat wave. Just pictures of the effects of the heat wave.
Pictures.
I'm playing a concert during this heat wave Sunday. I'm sure I'll make quite a picture.
So if Carol didn't sweat herself right out of the Northeast doing that concert on Sunday, if you're listening, Carol and Tenafly, you have won the Brian Lehrer Show t-shirt that we offered for whoever came up with our next Flickr project idea. So get in touch with us here at 212-433-WNYC or send us an email and we will make sure you get that Brian Lehrer Show t-shirt, the promised prize for suggesting our next Flickr project. And how about the project? Well, we will make this a special two-day Flickr project. That means photographers out there, get out and document perhaps the only 2 days in your lifetime. They are expected to be the only 2 days this summer where we will have triple digit heat or something very close to it in New York City and vicinity. At least let's hope they're the only 2 days. Maybe global warming will make this not so rare an event, but we'll see. We are calling this Flickr group 100 Degrees of Separation. We'll have it up shortly, and when you go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show, you'll see that title, 100 Degrees of Separation. And if you don't know, a Flickr page is a place on the web where you can post photos that belong to a specified group. Our group, 100 Degrees of Separation. So go and get creative. Go and document people who need help. Oh, and if you find such people, get them help, please. Go and find the unique image on a 100-degree day, ways that people look hot, things look hot, ways that people get cool, changes to the environment from the heat, whatever you want to document, go and get creative and find those unique images. Then post your photos to our 100 Degrees of Separation page. Original photos only for this two-day project. Don't pull old things you've shot in other heat waves. We want you to do it. Now, don't overly exert yourself. That's one of the things they say on a day like this. But go out and shoot photogs. If you want to look for that unique image and post it to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show for our 100 Degrees of Separation Flickr page. And for everybody, don't forget, in all seriousness, keep a lot of water on hand today. Put a lot of water in bottles if you haven't done it already. We had a situation in my building where there was brown water for a few days, not because the power was out, but because kids were using the hydrants in the neighborhood, and it wound up making the water run brown. So you should stockpile some water, stockpile some food, flashlights with batteries, radios with batteries, and other things that you will need. And those old-fashioned plug-in telephones that just plug into the phone jack and not the wall. All right, so get ready for these 2 days. They are going to be unusual. And according to New York One's weather button, as of a moment ago, it was 93 degrees already at 10 after 10, about 6 or 7 degrees warmer than it was yesterday at this time. And with the New York area bracing for what could be record high temperatures today and tomorrow, we are waiting for someone on the local news to try to fry an egg on the sidewalk. Hopefully your Flickr images will be more creative than that. The operative word there, however, is sidewalk. No one tries that experiment in Central Park on the grass, right? And it turns out that there are scientists studying that fact, that sidewalks are hotter than grass, and how the cumulative effect of all those sidewalks, roads, and buildings in urban areas can raise the temperature in a city over that of the surrounding suburbs or countryside, although it's not always true. Joining me now to talk about these heat islands, as they're called, is Stuart Gaffin, Associate Research Scientist at the Center for Climate Systems Research at the Earth Institute at Columbia University. You may have heard him in Fred Mogul's report on Morning Edition today on City Playground. Stuart Gaffin, welcome back to WNYC. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what is a heat island?
It's a tendency for cities to be significantly hotter than surrounding suburban and especially rural areas away from the urban core.
Because?
It's got a number of causes. It seems like almost most of the things we do when we build cities tends to lead to an urban heating effect. But I would put the following four items as the primary culprits. Tall buildings are very effective at trapping or gathering sunlight from the sun. Just the surface area of the buildings is enormous compared to the ground. Also, when the light gets into the street canyons, it gets trapped, sort of. Secondly, we use a lot of dark surfaces to build cities, asphalt roads and rooftops. And thirdly, there's a lack of vegetation compared to rural areas, which vegetation, trees, grass, and so forth are very efficient cooling machines, and we lack those relative to suburban areas. And finally, something I call man-made heat. We, through our activities of air conditioning and traffic, buses, subways, we're contributing a lot of man-made heat that's just adding to the overall effect.
So how many degrees of separation is all that worth compared to the suburbs?
It's more, believe it or not, it's more pronounced at night than during the day. Actually, we really see it clearly at nighttime. And at night, New York City is usually on average about 7 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than the surrounding suburbs and rural areas. You can sort of see this in the early morning report, the 6 a.m. weather report. When they show the map, you'll usually see Manhattan warmer than outlying Westchester and Jersey and so forth, Long Island. Then during the day, it diminishes a bit. We think it's because the winds get stronger during the day and the outer areas heat up under the sun. But overall, over a day, a good ballpark figure would be that New York City is 3.5 to 4 degrees warmer in the summertime.
And yet there are some days that it doesn't seem to be the case. And I wonder if there are different kinds of heat and different kinds of weather systems. For example, I heard on one of the reports this morning that southern New Jersey is actually supposed to get the worst of it in our area today. And I've noticed other times over the years where it seems to me like the areas that are there, maybe because they're a little more inland in New Jersey, are hotter than New York City. So am I making that up?
No, those are good points. There are lots of things that can affect areas. We talk about sea breezes and how important those are for cooling things off. And you're right, some days it's not as pronounced as others. In particular, when it's overcast, you don't see as much of an effect. And that's because the effects of sunlight are sort of diminished, and suburban and rural areas don't, and urban areas don't have much difference in their overall urban heat island. But if you do the statistics over any month of the year, it comes out. It's a pretty persistent phenomena, and it's been going on for a long time, probably for over the century, and it happens in all seasons.
So you talked about cities as heat islands. What about heat islands within cities?
Yeah, there are. There are hot spots within cities, and we can pinpoint them using satellite maps, remote sensing data of the ground temperature. And a number of places do stand out. And this last summer and previous summers, I've actually gone out and taken a look at these spots to see what's causing them to heat up more than the other areas.
And?
Usually it's a couple of culprits that are pretty interesting. Dark roofs, black roofs, and especially ones that are east-west sloping are pretty strong. You can almost pick them out, and they're usually associated with this. We've seen other effects like inadvertent heat trapping, the way a building is oriented with a reflective facade, you know, hitting a parking lot in front of it. Lack of vegetation, you know, the parks stand out as really cool areas. Central Park looks beautifully cool, and other parks do as well. So it's a bunch of these causes that I mentioned at the beginning.
So Fred Mogul, in his piece with you this morning, followed you and your team around as you took temperatures in city playgrounds. Is that how you do it? You just go around and take a lot of temperatures?
That's what we're doing. We're zapping temperatures wherever we go. It takes a lot of sampling to see the effects and correlations, and we do think we're starting to see some interesting ones. And the playgrounds we did as a sort of a side experiment, we're looking at how the public school playgrounds, how hot they are and how they might be transformed if they're redone to make them cooler and more comfortable for the kids.
In fact, from that piece, it sounded like these new AstroTurf playgrounds with the darker green artificial turf that's kind of spongy, almost feels like grass when you're standing on it, is no substitute for actual grass when it comes to lowering temperatures.
By no means, yeah. It's striking. The asphalt is, astro or sports turf shows up also on the satellite maps as other, and our experience seems to show it's really one of the hottest surfaces. We think it's because it's dark. It has a sort of a grass-like structure, which is sort of trapping sunlight. It's a very low mass. It doesn't take much sunlight to get it to really hot temperatures. But most importantly, it's not acting like grass because there's no water vapor evaporating. So the real reason you feel cool on true grasses and with trees is the water vapor that's coming off of those plants.
That's interesting. Do you study global warming?
Yes, I do.
Is there any reason to think we're seeing the effects of that today?
This heat wave is going to become part of the record of temperatures above 90, and no doubt it's going to help push the trend line up on the number of days above 90, which I think is the more important piece of evidence that scientists are going to look at. So until that analysis is done over the last few years and decades, I haven't done it. Looking at the temperatures for New York City for the century, there's no question that we have more 90-degree days now than at the beginning of the century. Until that's done, I can't comment on what this heat wave meant. But for me, the heat wave is more a vivid illustration of the dangers of global warming, because this is dangerous weather.
How do you mitigate the heat island effect? Can you?
Yeah, you can. We don't know how much, but you have to address these causes that I listed in the beginning. You can't do anything about tall buildings, obviously, but we can do something about the second, third, and maybe fourth cause, the dark surfaces, the roofs and roads. And for roofs, for example, there's a very cool technology called green roofing, living roofs, that we've done a lot of work on, and they are demonstrably effective in lowering these temperatures. In the setup to this interview, you mentioned where could you fry an egg. Well, my best candidate would be possibly on a roof over the next 2 days. I would expect typical dark roofs over the next 2 days to reach surface temperatures of 170 degrees or more. And so that's one strategy. Obviously, tree planting is something we're also looking at. And then using lighter colored surfaces is, for me, a secondary strategy, but it has a lot of potential because it's cheaper and easier to do in many cases.
Here's an email from a listener who asks, could you ask your guest this? In Southern Europe, people close all windows and draw the blinds during the hot, sunny parts of the day. Does this work?
It sure does. I do it. The principle that behind it to me is by getting your room sealed early in the day, you're sort of trapping the cool air that's inside the room, and air is not a good transmitter of heat. It actually is a good insulator. So as long as you keep that cooler inside and prevent hot air from outside getting inside, I think it's a very effective strategy. I do it. I use it all the time.
We have about 30 seconds left. Doesn't the hottest part of the summer usually come near the beginning of the summer, late June, early July? Is it a little unusual for it to start hitting here on August 1st?
I heard a meteorologist saying actually late July is early August is the more frequent period, and I just would assume that's because our surrounding oceans are starting to heat up. The winter cool is gone, and we're starting to feel the brunt of the local warming going on regionally.
All right. Well, we're going to ask a meteorologist that and other questions coming up in a minute, but I want to thank Stuart Gaffin, Associate Research Scientist at the Center for Climate Systems Research at the Earth Institute at Columbia University. Very informative. Thanks a lot.
Sure. You're welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We now have that Flickr page live on our website. We're calling it 100 Degrees of Separation. And today and tomorrow, we're encouraging photographers who have the energy and who have plenty of water and are willing to take care of yourselves while you do it to go out and document what might be the only 200-degree days that you've ever lived through, and who knows, maybe that you will ever live through. Let's hope that global warming doesn't make it a very common occurrence. Already 93 here at 1021, according to the New York One weather button that I'm looking at. And you can go out and find the people, find the places, find the things that reflect the heat in an interesting way. And Photox, post those images to our 100 degrees of separation Flickr page. You can do that by going to WNYC.org and clicking on Brian Lehrer Show. Nothing up there yet, of course. We just established it. Be the first one to go out and take a picture of the heat and share it with your fellow listeners today or tomorrow. Mayor Bloomberg has declared a heat emergency, meaning, among other things, that city pools will offer extended hours until 8 o'clock. Nearly 400 cooling centers, many of them in senior centers, are open for those without air conditioning in their homes. You can call 311 to find out the cooling center near you if you just give them your address. And residents are urged to conserve electricity. In fact, remember one of the things that happened in that Queens blackout is the Con Ed says it didn't realize the extent of the blackout because they were depending solely on the phone calls from ratepayers, from the customers. And not all that many people called up. I guess folks assume that when the power goes out, Con Ed knows about it or that somebody else told them. So now that we know better, if the power goes out in your neighborhood, call Con Ed right away and let them know. We here in the municipal building, owned and operated by the city, have thermostats turned up. The offices are not as cool as they usually are in the summer. Some elevators have been taken out of service. The man responsible for alerting the mayor about coming weather emergencies joins me now. Gary Conti is the warning and coordination meteorologist at the National Weather Service station at the Brookhaven National Laboratory on Long Island. Gary Conti, welcome to WNYC. Thanks for doing this on, I'm sure, a busy day for you.
Okay, you're welcome. I'm happy to be here.
How far out are you able to predict a heat emergency?
Let me first preface this and say excessive heat accounts for an estimated 1,500 deaths annually in the United States, and this is more than the number of deaths from tornadoes, hurricanes, lightning, and flash floods combined. NOAA's National Weather Service currently issues a suite of excessive heat products to provide the nation advance notice of excessive heat events for the protection of life and property, and it's primarily based on a single heat index value, which is derived from temperature and humidity. The heat index is simply how hot it feels when you step outside in the sun and are exposed to the humidity in the air. And how far can we actually predict that out ahead of time? Well, we issue outlooks that go, in some cases, 3 to 5 days out ahead of time. And we give people a heads up of when we can see an oppressive air mass like we have today over the eastern part of the country as it slowly progresses from the west to the east. And as we get closer to the event, we upgrade our outlooks, which could be in the 3 to 5 day time frame, to watches for excessive heat. We call those excessive heat watches. And those excessive heat watches are typically issued 24 to 48 hours before that oppressive air mass arrives. And then yesterday afternoon, the excessive heat watch that we did issue was upgraded to an excessive heat warning. That typically occurs within 24 hours of the event actually occurring. Now, let me just say what we're thinking of in terms of heat indices.
Mm-hmm.
Heat indices, the high temperature. Let's take as an example. Let's take around northern Queens as an example. For LaGuardia Airport today, we're predicting a high temperature of 102 degrees.
Mm.
Now, with the humidity, it's going to feel like about 110. On Wednesday, we're predicting high temperatures of 104 degrees. With the heat index, we're looking at heat indices close to 115 degrees. And although things improve, I'll use the word slightly for Thursday, with high temperatures around 99, the heat index will approach 110. The good news I have to share is that we are looking at a cool frontal boundary slipping south of the area for Friday, and we do get some relief on Friday. However, we are looking at a short but intense heat wave for the New York City metropolitan area.
Is the heat index a relatively new scientific concept? Because it seems to me when I was growing up as a kid, We heard about the wind chill factor in the winter, but we did not hear about the heat index in the summer.
Right. The heat index was probably implemented back in the early 1990s, and it was preceded by another index called the temperature humidity index, or the THI.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And the THI used different factors to come up with, again, a measure of how hot it feels. But the methodology behind the THI was really not truly indicative of how hot it actually felt. So a new formula essentially replaced an old formula. And I would say this occurred a little bit more than 15 years ago, probably in the 1992, 1993 timeframe is what I'm thinking.
Is, you know, I have friends who live in the Southwest in the Phoenix area, and when it gets up to 115 degrees there, as it does relatively routinely, and I say, oh, but you don't have the humidity. And they say, you want to be here in 115 degree heat and 10% humidity? Is very low humidity also oppressive, as very high humidity is, and something in the middle is the comfort zone?
Well, I mean, we're talking about a couple of different things here. On average, it is drier. It is drier in the southwestern United States, like you mentioned, in Arizona. People become what we call acclimatized and more accustomed to the heat, yet they still need to be sensitive and take protective action, even if it is dry. Here in the Northeast, specifically New York City, where we live, our climate is more variable, and people are not used to the extreme events occurring, like excessive heat events. And it's with this variability that the impact is much, much greater.
Jim in Union City, you're on WNYC.
Hi. Actually, just something you mentioned, it was the acclimatization. There was something on the French news regarding our bodies developing some sort of proteins to cope with the heat. But I called about the dew point. What is it, and what is its relevance to the index, if at all?
Okay. The dew point is a temperature to which air is cooled until it condenses and dew forms. What that means is it's actually a measure of the moisture in the atmosphere at the surface. And it's very important because combined with the temperature, it's a measure of humidity. So the dew point temperature is actually a key thing that's actually used when we compute the heat index for any given location.
Gary Conti is the warning and coordination meteorologist at the National Weather Service station at the Brookhaven National Laboratory on Long Island. Thank you very much for doing this with us today. Very informative.
Okay. You're welcome.
And in these triple-digit heat conditions, at least predicted triple digits, it's not there yet. We're still seeing 93 on the New York One weather button that we have up here. But chances are you're escaping the hardship right now in the comfort of an air-conditioned room if you can. Maybe you're in an office, maybe you're at home, wherever you are, it's pretty likely you're benefiting from the scientific wonders of a Freon gas exchange. But with these machines becoming the most appreciated appliances in these sweltering days, how much do you actually know about air conditioners? Just how much power are you consuming? How much use is necessary? And what should you know about one before you buy? Maybe you're sticking to your principles and dripping in the natural air, but maybe you're relenting and paying your first visit to the appliance store this summer. With us now to talk about all things air conditioning and to answer your questions, if you are just buying or just wondering about the one you have, is Jim Nanny. He's the manager of appliance and home improvement testing at Consumer Reports. Jim, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having Consumer Reports on your show.
And we can take your phone calls and emails, folks. Anything you wanted to know about air conditioning but had no one to ask, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or email brianlehrershow@wnyc.org. Let's start with the people, Jim, who don't use air conditioners. Are there reasons not to?
Well, certainly you're saving on electrical consumption, but I say that air conditioning should be considered much like heating is for our climate in the wintertime. You know, when the weather is extreme, then air conditioning is a viable choice.
Is that a Northeastern philosophy?
I think in the Northeast, people tend to view air conditioning more as a luxury. And in these extremes, it's particularly where it does become, you know, a health and life safety issue.
Air conditioning has really transformed culture in the southern United States, hasn't it?
Well, I believe a lot of the growth of the South has been contributed to by the advent and popularity of air conditioning. You know, it has really helped make the climate habitable in extreme conditions.
How does an air conditioner actually work? Where does the cold come from?
Well, basically, it's just moving heat from one point to another. In the process of compressing and expanding a refrigerant, R12, R22, different refrigerants, R134A is commonly used today. This gas goes from liquid to gaseous state, and it absorbs heat, and then it is carried away. In the case of an air conditioner, you're dumping that heat outside. And so basically, the electricity that's also consumed in the process, because most air conditioners are powered by electricity, that energy is also converted to heat and is also, you know, carried outdoors.
So this might be a simplistic question, but I have to ask it. Air conditioners cool the air inside and send the hot air outside. So just how much does the combined exhaust of all these thousands of air conditioners in the city actually affect the outdoor temperature?
Well, I would say, and your meteorologist spoke to that effect, that you know, they are adding heat to the local region. And basically, there are other things that are adding heat, you know, in your home. If you have lights on, appliances on, a computer, a TV, basically all that electrical consumption is being converted to heat. And so, you know, one of the first things you can do to save and make your home more comfortable is to reduce the heat sources, like turning off lights, turning off TVs that are not being watched, turning off computers that are not being used. And that can go a long way to helping reduce the buildup of heat in your space.
Well, unsurprisingly, we have a lot of people calling in with air conditioner questions, so let's get to as many as we can in the relatively short time that we have. Coming up in about 10 minutes, by the way, we will be asking the question, who in the world is Raul Castro? So stay tuned for that as he takes over control of Cuba, at least for the moment. John in Jersey City, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I have a question about the SEER rating of an air conditioning system. What's the difference between a 12 SEER and a 15 SEER, and how does it affect the price of the system?
Well, the SEER, or SEER rating, is an energy efficiency rating for central air conditioners. And it basically is considered a part load efficiency rating. It's not equivalent to an EER, which is the rating used for room air conditioners. The difference between a 12 SEER and a 15 SEER is roughly about, in theory, 30% reduction in your energy costs. The bottom line, though, some of the things that I often tell people is the duct system on a central air conditioner, which distributes the cool air. On most central air conditioning systems, you have a duct system to distribute the air to each room. A leaky duct system, ducts that are not insulated but are running through unconditioned spaces like in an attic or a garage or a basement, those are all losing your cooling energy. And, you know, there are studies, the Department of Energy suggests that, you know, 40% of your heating and cooling costs are lost through, you know, a leaky duct system or a system that's uninsulated. So one of the first things I would suggest, a long-term approach, it's not the not the cure for a day like today, but have your duct system sealed up. Have it checked to make sure that it's delivering the right amount of cool air to each room, because basically it's the volume of air that's going to each room that's going to determine whether it's being cooled properly or not.
All right.
It insulated if any of the duct work is traveling through spaces that you're not cooling.
Go to another call, and we'll get in as many as we can in limited time.
Sure.
So quick questions and succinct answers. Mark in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Brian, love your show.
Thank you.
Why do air conditioners leak?
That is the moisture that they're condensing out of the air. You heard about the dew point earlier, and the dew point, basically the coil is operating at 50 degrees, and the moisture is condensing on the air and collecting and dripping out.
How do you make it stop?
Well, you want it to do that, because basically what it's doing is removing moisture from the air and therefore making the air that you're conditioning less humid and more comfortable.
Matthew in Fairfield, you're on WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if there's ever been any work done on devising a solar-powered air conditioner.
I'm not familiar with that, but certainly it's in the realm of feasibility. We do use heat sources in other types of cooling systems. Heat is used as the mechanism by which we transfer energy. So, we're all familiar with the refrigerant-based mechanical refrigeration cooling air conditioning system, but there are other types of systems that rely on heat, and so in theory you could design a system that's solar-based.
Heather in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. In trying to save energy, I've heard about a couple of products that say that you consume less. One is an evaporative cooler that's just a plug-in, not a wall-through unit, and another was a misting fan, and I'm wondering if you had any experience with those and whether or not they work.
Well, certainly any product that's going to make water evaporate is going to cool the air some. However, they become less effective as the humidity in the air goes up. So, on a day like today, they would be certainly less effective than if you were in Arizona and it was 100 degrees, because there the humidity is so low that the water would readily evaporate and have a significant cooling effect.
Scott in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. How is it possible that in a heat emergency that the mayor allows 50% of the businesses in Midtown to keep their doors wide open, pumping cold air out into the streets? Why don't they close those doors and reduce their energy consumption?
Well, I'm not sure what the mayor's decision is, but certainly I would agree with you that trying to contain the cool air will go a long way to reducing your cooling costs and the energy demand.
Thank you, Scott. Last thing, do you think people can get too used to air conditioning, and can it actually make it harder for us to feel comfortable on a hot day?
Well, certainly, you do get acclimated to conditions. So if you're acclimated to a nice 75-degree room, and going out in 100-degree weather is going to seem oppressive. But at the same time, I look at it as, that's just the way some things are necessary. Just like heating is necessary when it's 20 degrees outside, maybe on that 100-degree day, air conditioning should be the accepted norm.
15 seconds left. You told my producer there are myths about air conditioning. Give us the biggest one.
Well, one of the things is people think bigger is better, and that's probably the worst thing you can do with sizing air conditioning. For the best comfort, you really want to have the appropriately sized air conditioner. And on our website, consumerreports.org, we have a free calculator that allow people to size to determine the size of the air conditioner that they need for their room.
Jam Nanny from Consumer Reports. We have a link to that on our site. Thank you very much for coming on. Post Fidel Cuba next.